If music is liquid architecture, and architecture is frozen music, then music venues are magic in motion. And this podcast is your audio atlas to experiencing the very best of them. From Good to Go Studios, this is ConcertCast the podcast. A music venue is not only a building where bands play, but a space for people to remove the proverbial headphones and partake in a shared experience. Music venues have the power to form bonds between people from different backgrounds, which ultimately makes them an asset in every community. From opera houses to underground jazz clubs, venues are built differently to cater to different sounds, which by default makes music venues one of a kind, in structure and in spirit. Jump in and join Kyle Lamont, a road-tripping music journalist who believes that every venue has a voice. So let us go and listen. This episode of ConcertCast the podcast is powered by Maven Upholstery, high society moto seats from the woods of down east Maine. Maven, the seat that will get you there. Snowbird Season, Episode 1, Brooklyn.
My passion for music venues began in college while working at the Blue Note in Columbia, Missouri. Cleaning puke from the urinals after Rob Zombie concert is a formidable way to start out in the music industry. I was soon promoted to merchandise sales, where, while hawking t-shirts with my good friend Kelly, I had the pleasure of talking to so many music fans. I toted talent around in my old Subaru station wagon, affectionately called the Cyclops, because the headlight kept burning out. Rolled fatty joints with sound techs, worked with our talent buyers on ways to bolster ticket sales. And it was so much fun hanging out with Richard King, the owner, while we walked around town stapling concert posters to telephone poles. But one of my most resounding memories of my time working there, outside of raging with the band after their show, was when I was asked to lock up after settling with the band's merchandise manager. I would watch as the tour bus rolled out of town, and then just before switching the lights off and turning the key, I would sometimes stand in the middle of the empty venue and let the particles of people's past envelop me. The phantom sound waves swam with my soul. The quietness was not still. It moved and it danced with me. I fell in love with live music in a whole new way on these nights. And it's why I'm so driven to experience all the unique vibes that every venue has. And working at the Blue Note opened my eyes to the mini microcosm that a music venue is. I'm so captivated by all the people it takes to make live music happen. From talent buyers to agents, security guards, sound techs, managers, bus drivers, bartenders, the list goes on. Live music is just that. Alive. So moving to Manhattan after college was a no-brainer. But my timing was a bit off. New York City, a kaleidoscopic sensory experience. Sound, the most profound. Listening to an urban symphony while simply sitting on a stoop can be both equal parts gratifying and annoying, but mainly mysterious. I happened to move to this city at the peak of the economic crash. Juggling lots of odd jobs was made easy, knowing that I could see live music in a new venue every night of the week, which I did. But my excitement for seeing so much music was met with despair from many concertgoers. Rent was and still is rising, corporations infiltrating, and there was a clear seismic shift in the pursuit of art. And Brooklyn quickly became the new epicenter for live music. We'll be revisiting New York's finest music venues later this season, but for this episode, I'm in Brooklyn, hanging out with my friend Jake Shufranowski. He's a crazy SOB, and he's also the founder of a floating music venue.
The Rocks Off Concert Cruise Company is one of the most unique live venues in New York City, if not the entire world. The concerts take place on a boat unfolding during a 3-hour tour around New York Harbor. Fans and bands meld into one as they sail alongside the Statue of Liberty, the Brooklyn Bridge, and one of the world's most stunning and singular skylines. Throwing concerts on boats and seeing fans and bands enjoying the shit out of themselves is why I do this. And seeing America's reigning queen, Lady Liberty, on the regular is a total perk too.
Up next, Jake and I are heading to Sunset Park to check out a record pressing plant before visiting venues in Williamsburg and Greenpoint. It's around 8 a.m. on an overcast fall day. Trucks are making their deliveries, and grocery store owners are proudly lining up fruits outside their shop, oranges appearing brighter than the sun. We're in Sunset Park, and with caffeine in hand, we're in search of Brooklyn Fono. Neither of us have been to this hood before, so it's definitely an adventurous start to the day. Lots of warehouses and mechanics. I even notice a bunch of chicken coops. It's gritty and old school. Prime pickings for gentrification. We spot Thomas, the owner, up ahead, who's opening the factory for the day. Jake is a bona fide record buff, so he's practically skipping at this point. We say hello, exchange pleasantries, and immediately want to know more about the area.
15 years ago, I came to this location. This was a dirt bike track. No roof, maybe some bricks here and there.
Thomas is eccentric and very smart. He owns the factory with his wife, Fern, and he rattles off about the specifications needed for his industrial-style machines to run smoothly.
They built a building kind of to your spec?
Yeah, so I said, look, I have a boiler. It needs to be blown down. Like, you ever see a locomotive, like, blow all that steam off?
Yeah.
So that's required.
In essence, Sunset Park is the best place for a record-pressing operation.
Sunset Park for life?
This business, when we got the certificate of occupancy for it, it was class use group 17B, which is specifically vinyl record pressing. Can I show you everything?
We can actually go in and see the machines.
Oh,
hell yeah. Let's go, Tom.
We walk in and it feels like we've stepped back in time. And the way these machines make hissing and grunting sounds, it's almost like they're alive. Engineering and hydraulics in action. 120 tons of pressure stamping sound waves into grooves.
4 12-inch and 1 7-inch. Yeah. Do you feel like each machine has its own personality?
They try. I standardize them.
It's almost like a Dr. Frankenstein where the monster is kind of overtaking you?
Yes. It was that way for years, and now we're doing much better.
Brooklyn Fono has been open since 2003, and it's one of the only places in the country that is actively preserving this type of listening experience. They make about 10,000 records a month for indie labels and EDM groups out of Europe. But for Thomas, it's less about the music and more about the machines.
Had you been a machinist before?
My father was a machinist, so I had some help.
Did you used to play with machines as a kid and take them
apart
and put them together?
Yeah, I took the washing machine apart on a babysitter once and then put it back together, and she had such a panic.
Did it work when you put it back together?
Yeah, it worked.
So you're like, baby, I got this, don't worry about it.
Well, yeah, but they always tell me the story. I don't remember, but they tell me all the time.
Jake is invited to put a freshly pressed, bright pink record into its sleeve. His dimples are flexing extra hard because he's so damn happy holding music. The tangibility truly does give you a better appreciation for music, which is why a visit here is a must for any music lover, especially before checking out Rough Trade Records in Williamsburg. But first, lunch. We make our way to Delafonte's in Red Hook. This Brooklyn deli experience is straight out of a movie. The pointing, the screaming, the bada-bings, bada-booms is just smile-worthy. And the sandwiches, really tasty, too. After eating, in an effort to stop the food coma from setting in, we jump in the car and drive to Williamsburg. Jake drops me off at the Wythe Hotel, which is uber chic and surprisingly very affordable. When you walk in, you feel like a sexy ass rock star. I've requested the corner room because the floor-to-ceiling windows offer a surreal view of the New York City skyline. I drop off my things and then head upstairs to the rooftop bar, order a cup of coffee, and sip in the view. I'm excited because we're meeting up with Jake and Ed. Ed is the manager of Rough Trade Records, and he's going to be giving us a daytime tour of the venue. That's right. Rough Trade is a twofer, a record store and music venue in one. The building is an old theater props warehouse on 9th Street between Kent and Wythe. High ceilings, exposed brick, and sheet metal from shipping containers line the wall. There's a photo booth, a little coffee shop, and big cartoon stickers are slapped on the floor. I spot the guys in the back of the store, and they're talking about Ed's favorite album, Cut, from The Slits, a female punk band from the 70s. Look them up. They rock.
In a shop full of records. How many copies of it do you own?
Three. Yeah.
All on vinyl?
No.
Cassette, CD, and vinyl?
Cassette would be great. I've never seen it on cassette.
The interesting and random thing is that this album cover pretty much matches your shirt.
Well, I try to color coordinate wherever possible. It's important in my line.
In the era where Rough Trade opened, record stores were doing nothing but closing.
Definitely. And I mean, and being in Williamsburg, which has become, you know, such a cultural hub in New York City, you know, it just made sense for it to be here. We find that being in Williamsburg, there's a lot of people who really want, you know, vinyl and are consuming music in a physical fashion.
Can we head into the venue before the band gets here?
We weave through displays, and then Ed unlocks the door to the venue.
This is well lit enough.
It's dimly lit, freshly cleaned, and eerily quiet.
So what is it like being in a venue without people, like when it's quiet like this?
There's a real tranquility to it, which I've always appreciated. I mean, it's kind of, I find that it's hard to picture the things that go on in this room when it's in this state. You know, and I like that. I like this, you know, the sort of moments of serenity before, you know, everything kind of goes over the top in the evening time.
The 300-person venue is industrial and edgy. There's more sheet metal that line the wall and wrought iron railings. And the light bulbs are in metal cages.
You know, Rough Trade started in, you know, in the punk era in the 70s. And so, you know, the aesthetic has always been quite raw boned. And what we present to people in terms of the music is, you know, is hopefully a bit more, you know, kind of lavish and stuff. But the environment itself, we like to keep a little bit more bare bones just so that, I guess, the records themselves, you know, shine a little bit more.
Upstairs in the balcony are ping pong tables, awesome views of the stage, and a small art gallery. Currently on display are photos from Ebra Yeldez. Her black and white photos are fabulous, and they were all shot at Death by Audio, a recently closed music venue.
You know, it was kind of a legendary local venue where, like, everybody played. You know, it was really, you know, kind of a linchpin in Williamsburg for a long time.
A lot of bands and a lot of bigger bands would come and play. I mean, just looking at some of these pictures, see A Place to Bury Strangers, Ty Segall, Future Islands, like, lots of bands who could have played much larger rooms wanted to play a place like that.
Absolutely.
And that's something that also happens here, right?
Let's
talk about some of the huge bands who have played here. For instance, I saw Weezer here recently, a band that plays arenas.
That was really wild. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think because we're quite lucky in that the venue is, it's large enough to be accommodating, but, you know, small enough to be intimate. And, you know, a lot of larger bands that would ordinarily play huge venues, you know, really like it for that. So it's, you know, it's not so small that it doesn't make sense. You know, they can still, you know,
you've got a nice sized stage and extremely awesome production with the sound system and the lighting in here.
Yeah, the sound is amazing. I mean, I think just, yeah, by virtue of the you know, the fact that we are also a record store is really, you know, is alluring to a lot of artists. And you know, it kind of feels as though even though the venue is separate, that they're part of this larger musical hub that we try to create here.
When you leave Rough Trade, take a left on 9th and then a right on Kent, and you'll stroll along the beautiful waterfront. It's here where we get to talking about how cool this section of Williamsburg is. There are venues everywhere. Seriously, you have Music Hall of Williamsburg, Babies All Right, Shea Stadium. I could rattle on. And oh yeah, the Knitting Factory. I love that spot. They have a plexiglass soundproof partition that separates the bar from the venue, so you can still watch the band while carrying on a conversation at the bar. It's rad. What I'm trying to say is that there are a lot of venues in this area, but the anchor of this live music movement in Williamsburg is Brooklyn Bowl. From the waterfront, take a right on 11th Street and cruise back towards Wythe. Yes, we've been here before. That's because yours truly was thinking ahead and got herself a hotel room right across the street from the music venue where we're going to be ending our night. Brooklyn Bowl opened in 2009 by Peter Shapiro and Charlie Ryan. They're basically the yin and yang of the music industry. Shapiro is the world's leading concert promoter, and Ryan, well, he created the vibe of this venue by designing the brand.
When you guys found it, what was it?
It was an iron foundry, then it became a warehouse, and it seemed to have just fallen down the food chain of warehouses to where it was just dilapidated, hard to believe, 10 years ago, with holes in the roof and all that kind of stuff. Nobody really wanted it. In fact, the landlord, when Peter and I came in here and found it, he looked at us and said, I don't know how you guys see anything in this place.
Since that day, they've built an entertainment complex. Here at the Bowl, obviously, there's bowling, live music, food, and aesthetic everywhere. The signature Punch and Judy's line the wall, and there's a fortune-telling machine, and probably the biggest disco ball you'll ever see. The magnitude of entertainment is on full display, and the fried chicken and beer selection puts this place over the top. And if you're worried about bowling being a distraction while watching the bands, think again. This state-of-the-art technology removes sound from when the pins crash down. And I always remark on the smell here. It just smells like rich mahogany or something.
Why does this place smell so different?
Well, it isn't any kind of, you know, any kind of engineering. I mean, that's interesting, right? When people pipe smells in. But partially it smells so different because it doesn't smell stale, because most people don't do as good a job as we do with cleaning it. Yeah, it's true. But
this place has a remarkable, distinct smell. It really does.
Yeah. Well, do you think should I leave it the way it is, or should I
love it.
Should I bump
it's
it up
like,
with
like a,
with a bunch of those car fresheners,
no.
You know, maybe a couple thousand of them?
You can bottle this smell.
You could?
Yes,
okay.
And sell it.
All right.
Brooklyn Bowl.
The freshness of this venue, I think, is attributed to the fact that this is a LEED certified building, one of the first music venues to do such a thing. The wood is repurposed from local Navy shipyards, and the stage floor is made entirely of recycled truck tires.
It must have been quite nerve-wracking the first night you opened doors and let the public in and put a band on stage, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to be cocky about things. I looked around here and thought people are going to love this, but what if they don't? You know, you just don't know what they'll think. And then finally people did come in the door, and you saw them. I mean, it was fun. For the first 6 months, I'd say, the average person who walked in the door had never been here. So they walk in and they go, whoa, and you just see it on their face. And they look around and they're trying to get their bearings, and they realize there's more to see, and, you know, you can almost follow them through the venue with a hidden camera and just watch their eyes light up, say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Lots of different things to be engaged with. The magic of this place is all the different things that are going on at once without colliding with each other.
And there have been some legendary performances from Kanye West to Guns N' Roses and so many jam bands like Humphreys McGee. Even Bill Clinton has spoken here. And I love telling the story about the time I saw Lettuce here. They're a funk band from Brooklyn, and during their set break, Shapiro and Ryan came out on stage to make a toast. And the next thing I knew, we were surrounded, practically flanked by the staff who were holding trays and trays of tequila shots, one for everyone. The grand gesture was certainly epic.
How would you describe the booking here?
Our booking is just based on what creates a great time and people want to hear and see. But on the busier nights, you have a little latitude for booking people that people might not have heard of already, but you know that the room is going to get filled up and they're going to have a great time with that band. So it's you know, it's a great thing to be a little bit of an incubator or be able to present talent that not everybody in the world knows about.
What do you love about all this?
Well, just trying to make it better all the time. And we've got other locations now, so trying to make them better. You know, it's complacency is really our enemy. And, you know, we're working on a couple of fresh ideas, things that are outside of the box.
No matter what type of music you get down to, Brooklyn Bowl is a guaranteed good time. And we'll be back later tonight to see Toots and the Maytals. It's twilight as we drive over to Greenpoint, just a few blocks away. Jake is eager to meet up with his buddy at St. Vitus, a discreet, heavy metal venue where an upside-down cross is a fitting marquee. We walk in and the place is glowing. There's red rope lights strung everywhere and a soft flicker from candles. Dave Castillo meets us. He's the part owner and head talent buyer, but the credit for designing the venue goes to Matthew Matty, who converted the old plumbing school into what it is today. We belly up to the bar and talk about all the fun mementos everywhere you look.
It's kind of crazy. Like, people like bring shit to us, you know? Like, we have like a snow globe from like St. Vitus Cathedral that someone just brought to us, and we're like, here, you know, like for your bar.
Dave then takes us into the main room, which feels like a shoebox, not gonna lie. It's hard to believe that heavy hitters like Dave Grohl and Megadeth have raged here. Soundcheck is heating up, so we go to the basement / green room to chat some more.
We're down here in the dressing room.
It's like the shittiest basement that so many fucking weird, wild, fun, crazy people have hung out in.
Do you recall what one of your earliest holy shit booking where the phone rang and it was someone wanting to play here that you never dreamed you'd be able to get?
So, honestly, one of the things they put us on was not really a show, but it was a book release party, and that was with Tony Iommi. Legitimately.
Tony Iommi plays guitar for Black Sabbath, who wrote the song St. Vitus, that St. Vitus named their band after, that you named your club after, so it really completed the fucking circle of rock.
Yeah, the godfather of the riff.
St. Vitus, Tony Iommi are big metal moments. Walk us through how Nirvana played here after their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
That was nuts. Tour manager dude rolls in, does like one lap around the spot, and he just looks around and he just pulls out his phone. He's like, Dave, this is the fucking place, man. You're going to love this. And then that was it.
The story is a bit layered, but needless to say, the night was bonkers. And the craziest part to me was the fact that everyone was dressed up after the award show. I'm talking suit and tie style.
It was crazy. Courtney Love showed up. It was totally insane.
Listening to Castillo talk about this story, among others, in this gnarly ass green room is as heavy as the music that plays here.
It's a freaking bomb ass story. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll be telling it for the rest of my life.
Dude, I can't even imagine.
You've done an amazing job making it feel like New York City's rock and roll living room.
Yeah.
A place where you just come and hang out with your friends and awesome bands happen to play. There's a flow to it that not a lot of small venues have. It's not just a box where you walk in and there's the bar here and the band there and it's just one place. Like, there's actually three distinct sections of this room.
And it's a bar, sort of primarily, but then it sort of grew into this fucking organic show beast where all this weird magic happens.
While chatting, Karina Reichman meets us. She's Jake's GM at Rocksoft. And, oh yeah, a badass bassist who's currently on tour with Benevuto Russo Duo.
There was a moment in my life where I spent every day here, whether I was playing a show, settling a show, or just going as a fan. Like,
why
I literally...
the queen of Titus.
I know.
We head upstairs to watch the band, and I just freaking love how this genre has the power to release feelings in a really raw way. After a few songs, we collectively agree to head back towards Brooklyn Bowl because we want to catch Toots and the Maytals' last set.
The venues out here in Brooklyn are grouped in Williamsburg, so right. You can literally just hop from one to the other.
Right. Now, Jake, I got to tell you, and I'm not biased, I think the Brooklyn Bowl is my favorite club in New York City.
Our excitement and anticipation is cutting through the crisp night air. Three massive tour bus line the street, and the enthusiastic crowd is gathered in line, waiting for their turn to be carted. The door guys here are some of the best in the biz, friendly and efficient. And it always makes you feel really special when they remember you. And when you get high fives while walking towards the front door, you know it's gonna be a fun show. Inside, it's like a musical sea of smiling faces. We surf on over to stage right for a terrific view of Toots and the Maytals. Watching him tap and sing away while the disco ball ricochets all the good vibes is my kind of bliss. I absolutely adore seeing shows here, and his backup singers just add a whole other whopping layer of love. I look over at Jake and Karina, and they have a permagrin glued to their face. We jam the night away and then bid our adieus. I walk across the street, all of 20 feet, back to the hotel. My nightcap is a soft-baked cookie. I stand at the edge of my bed, dazzled by the twinkling skyline, enamored with the amazing day, filled with so many cool people, stories, and sounds. The ringing in my ear disappears as soon as my head hits the pillow.
Buckle up, the Venue Venture has only just begun. Season 1 is a road trip around Maine, Lamont's home state, for conversations with venue owners and general managers like Lauren Wayne at the State Theater.
The fire alarm goes off. Yeah, our very first show.
Musicians like John Fishman of Fish.
Getting to play on that air control tower was awesome.
And the ghost of Paul Revere.
Pretty interesting that, like, rooms have memory and they hold on to it.
Business owners, lobstermen, and more, who all share their perspective on Maine and the magic of music venues. Subscribe, rate, and review ConcertCast in your podcast app of choice. And type in concertcast.live for a music-centric itinerary and to learn how you can be part of the show. This has been a Good to Go Studios production created by Kyle Lamont and made in Ellsworth, Maine. Our resident mastermind is Mark Tuckersham. And special thanks to everyone in this episode for their time. And to Eugene Eunice, Dan DeStefano, Pepper Little, Abby Rock Jessamine, Corey Chandler, Emma Teamy, Eddie Contento, Jesse Kudo, and thank you for listening.